Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Spotsylvania School Superintendent Dr. Scott Baker with us this morning. Dr. Baker is by phone. Good to have you here this morning. Good morning.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me, Ted.
Well, this is good because it's always good to get to catch up. Schools right now, everything is everyone is everyone is Spotsylvania. It's virtual for most students these days, and that'll go on for another week. And what Tuesday or Monday night, the school board will decide what happens next.
Actually, it will be on Tuesday. We're going to on the 26th. We'll have a meeting that's going to start at 5:30, and at that meeting, we're just going to provide, as we always do, an update on our return to learn status, and that will be, you know, what we shared previously in terms of, you know, as we've been sharing in written communication, that one of the biggest challenges that we've had as the virus has surged throughout our community is not because school was open, but because outside of school, a lot of our folks are impacted that have to work in person in order for our hybrid model to work. And so we've been monitoring very carefully how that virus has impacted people who work in our school system directly, teachers, support staff, even principals and administrators. And so we just have to make sure that we don't have too many that are quarantined or that are not able to be able support the mitigation strategies that we have in place. But that same evening, we'll also, Ted, have the budget presentation, the recommended budget for myself and my new chief business officer, Prashant Shrestha. We will present the FY22 recommended budget to the school board, and that'll be followed up on Thursday with another budget work session for FY22 budget.
But you never have any rest. You're dealing with a pandemic. You're dealing with a budget, and boy, it just goes on. As we go along this morning, Dr. Baker, we will talk about the budget a little bit later. One of the things that you just touched on, and I think a lot of us sometimes forget this, that when you went back to virtual, I think it was thought, well, it's because the numbers in the community are so high. But as you mentioned, there so much more goes into this. And at the time, you did go to all virtual. I know there were a lot of bus drivers were going to be out, and there were just some of the logistics of keeping school going was really behind the decision.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think what we communicated, and this was a decision that I recommended when we first were coming back from winter break, and I had hoped that we, you know, would have, the adequate staffing and that we would be in a better position. But one of the things that became pretty clear, especially as we got into the second week of our winter break, that more and more of our folks were impacted. And what a lot of people don't know is even now, when we are implementing just our in-person model for our prioritized learners, which are kids like our low incidence programs in special education, just to have those programs in person, we have over 100 buses that are out on the road. I don't know that folks think about that. I think they think, well, there's just a few kids coming in. But even just to do our low incidence programs, we have a lot of man and woman power that is required for us to deliver those services. But as we communicated before, it was really the combined factors. We were seeing, the whole state is seeing surges in the two key metrics, primarily the incident cases per 100,000 and also the positivity rate. And ours had really grown substantially even since we had gone back for winter break. So when we combined that with how our folks were being impacted, we were hoping that maybe after a couple of weeks, and as you know, the board following our report also voted to give it another 2 weeks so that hopefully as we come to the end of this month that we're in a position to transition back to our hybrid model. I will certainly be open to the board's will on that when we meet on Tuesday, but I know that we're still monitoring it carefully, and our goal would be to be able to transition back on the 1st.
Well, and I know the governor has been, a couple of weeks ago, in his press conference, was very upfront about the fact that he did want schools, if they're able, to be able to start getting kids back into school.
Yeah, I'm aware we have been reviewing the new interim guidance that the state has released. That will be something else, Ted, that we'll put out to our school board. We've already shared the document, but we'll share just a kind of a summary or interpretation of it. The intent of the guidance, I don't believe, is that far from what we as a school system were already implementing in conjunction with our communication with local health officials, which is to balance what we're seeing in terms of the metrics for, the external metrics for cases in our community with what is the direct impact on the school and the school system. And if we can continue to implement our 5 mitigation strategies and we can have the human capacity to deliver those services at any level, but hopefully for us it's a pre-K to 12, then we would, be guided to remain in an in-person mode. One of the things, though, that there's a new matrix that is a part of that guidance that I think folks are interpreting now. But basically, if you look at the external metrics where everybody sees red, which is the highest risk in terms of those metrics, when they look at how are we doing in terms of our in-person model, the fortunate thing for us has been that we've actually had a comprehensive hybrid model, for all levels, that we can actually monitor that. Because if you haven't been in person, then you don't know that yet. So I think we're at least able to know that when and the virus has continued to, those metrics have continued to increase since we started in the second quarter with the hybrid. So I really feel like we can continue to do it, but we have to make sure that our people are not sick, that they're healthy, and that they're able to come in and deliver those services. And as you also know, Ted, we have a large percentage, almost 50% of our students who remain virtual in terms of choice. So as far as how we support all of our kids, it's a real challenge and a balancing act.
Well, I can go back to, last summer. I could go back and find, some of the interviews we did in, June, July, in August. And you talked then about how the unfortunate thing with all of this is you just can't make everyone happy. And there is no right or wrong answer. And that's what's made this so difficult for every school system.
Well, I think probably just about every month I have commented on being appreciative at a state level, local level, at times a national level with CDC, we've appreciated guidance. We are educators and educational leaders. We're not health experts, and so we have tried to follow the guidance and make the best decisions that we could make with all the information that we had at hand. But the challenge has been that guidance has frequently changed or shifted, and we then had to reevaluate. And I was sharing last night with a parent advisory, a wonderful group of parents that I get to meet with each month, and they give us great feedback on what's working and what we can do better, and just really good inside feedback from a parent perspective. I was sharing that, you may remember years ago, the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think of it about highly effective leaders, too. And one of my favorites is begin with the end in mind. Well, that's been extraordinarily difficult when we have so little control over what the process, the vision, the end of this can look like. But I will say, Ted, for the first time, seeing so many of our folks being able to receive that first dose of the vaccine, beginning to start planning for the spring, the summer, and even thinking about next school year, we are able to start thinking more with the end in mind, except that we still need resources. Yeah, that's the key that kind of segues into later when we talk about the budget and really the revenue from all three of our major sources. We've got to have resources, sustainable resources, in order to tackle this challenge for the long term.
Much more with Spotsylvania School Superintendent Dr. Scott Baker. He is with us this morning. We're going to take a quick break and be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Opinions. We've all got them. And we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubert.
Spotsylvania School Superintendent Dr. Scott Baker is here this morning. We're talking about the budget in just a few minutes. But first of all, boy, Dr. Baker, I think kudos to all of you. And really, that it doesn't get enough credit, and you don't get enough credit for. I mean, you have had a hybrid model since the fall, and not many schools can say that. And there are schools that are just going back right now, and there are schools that still haven't gone back. And like you said earlier, you've got a lot of data, you know, with what you've done, because Spotsylvania has been successfully doing it.
Yeah, I think it was back on October 12th. It was at the end of our first day. We had a school board meeting, and I had to start us off with just kind of describing, you know, all the preparations that had gone and all the teamwork that had gone into just being able to, you know, really initiate and launch this model. And as you know, and I shared this again with my parent group last night, and I know that it's never been perfect or right for anybody on either side of it, whether they were virtual or hybrid. We know that it's not what is most needed and ideal, but we also know that a lot of our kids and families need that in-person experience to the extent that we can provide it. And I got emotional by surprise, and I think it was because when you are as large as we are, one of the largest school systems in the state, and I don't think even folks realize that sometimes Virginia has quite a few large school systems, but we're one of the largest school systems in the nation when you really begin to break it down. And to know that our folks were able to pull together and just my leadership team, the principals, our teachers, our support staff, and be able to do that, I was so just blown away in that moment. And that was only after the first day. But for us to have been able to sustain that for the entire second quarter, it, as you know, required a lot of daily adjustments, daily contact tracing, decisions. And it's going to be that way, I think, when we transition back again. But I do believe that going through that has positioned us well to be able to navigate this, you know, throughout the rest of this school year. I still don't know when we can fully expect to be in a more normal mode. I believe we're all kind of looking at next year as being closer, but we're also beginning to think about, we know there's going to be substantial learning loss and expanded learning gaps as a result of what we've had to navigate this year. And so we also have to begin to think about what does recovery and kind of healing look like for our school system, because our kids are not only, many are struggling academically, but we also know there's the social-emotional part of that. And I believe we've helped our kids and families by at least having, at all levels, the opportunity for a substantial period of time for them to be in person and to connect. And I hope that we're able to, you know, resume in about a week.
And I guess one of the things that you have to be encouraged by is this week teachers started getting vaccinations. So that helps us move along.
Yes, Mary Washington Healthcare, wow, that was we were trying to work locally to set up clinics, and we did set up a clinic for next week for 3 days at Massaponics High School. So we're going to have more school and county staff getting the vaccine next week. But when Mary Washington Healthcare was able to schedule teachers beginning last week and all staff, all school staff, all throughout this week, we're hoping that, you know, come the end of January, that the majority of our staff that have signed up will have received that first dose, which, again, helps us in terms of, you know, navigating through this.
You talked about just about the healing process, and I know some of this is maybe out of your hands, but I mean you've talked about how summer school, you may want to beef up summer school this year, and the state and the governor has talked about maybe year round school next year to try to help things. I guess that as we start to get back to normal, as that whenever that process starts, these are some of the next discussions that have to take place.
Yes, so conceptually. Ted, I think that there are a lot of great ideas. There always are great ideas in terms of how to address equity in our learning, equity and support for students, for families, for our staff. The challenge is that I rarely see equity represented in the form of adequate funding. And so, and not to point fingers at any one group or one entity, but the governor's current proposed budget, while I am very pleased that he is holding school systems like ours throughout the Commonwealth harmless in terms of the what we believe is a temporary loss of enrollment as we get through the pandemic, there isn't a whole lot of additional funding that's recurring as part of state aid that is going to help us move forward at the level and the rate that we need to. Now, we are encouraged that at the federal level, we are going to receive a substantial amount of one-time funding that can be utilized to, again, further mitigate COVID-19 and to help with some of that recovery. So I'm very encouraged about that. But that money has to go towards things that are going to be for one time, not for things like salaries, which we desperately need to increase and address for our staff, additional permanent human resources, those things, as you know, that we request each and every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I can appreciate that year-round schooling, at some point, I'm sure realize that it's virtually impossible for anyone to make that kind of shift for the next school year right now unless there's a whole lot of other guidance and support. But the other thing that I believe is just a year-round model requires more funding.
Yeah.
And it requires more funding recurring if it's going to be something that schools and school systems are doing for the long term.
That is interesting because that hasn't been discussed. It's just been kind of, you know, kind of the overall concept, and you know that's why I'm glad to have you here this morning to somebody who thinks about it that there is more funding and that part of this, that component has never been discussed.
Right. I think we tried to position ourselves, and thanks to the good work of our calendar committees and our school board a few years ago. I think our current construct of the calendar, it allows for at some point a pivot to having more time built in to the school year and perhaps different kinds of breaks because we settled in on a start date that enables us to, you know, complete the first semester and the second semester at pretty natural breaks. But in order to have kids in school more, that means that you need to have staff in school more. You need to have resources available and buildings open. And as you know, that's going to cost additional money to support. And while I can see a big benefit in that, I'm a lifelong Virginian, but I know of many states that have really good, successful year-round models. But before we go down that road too far, I hope that, go back to the beginning with the end in mind. If that's really something that the state is serious about pushing, then I hope that they're thinking, well, what does the funding need look like in order to support that?
Yep, it would seem like it's going to have to be substantially more, obviously, and there's going to have to be a rethinking of how, you know, how funding comes.
Agreed. I think that like most places, and I don't think Virginia is alone in this, but it's somewhat of an antiquated funding model that it's all the majority of the bread and butter of your funding is your cost per pupil. So for every student, you get a certain amount of money. But one of the things when talking about a concept or a notion of equity is that you know from following us over the years, it's been an annual budget message, people say, well, you're not growing that much in terms of total students. And in fact, this year we will hear, well, you've lost students, therefore you don't have the need for as many staff or the need for as much funding. But where we have grown every year is in certain populations who require substantially more resources to be served, such as our special needs population, our English learners, students who are in poverty, and we are increasing in that in those areas substantially over the last few years. So I think from a funding perspective, we can't just fund based on numbers. We have to fund based on need, which I know is not a simple prospect, but I do think it's something that needs to be, you know, looked at and considered much more carefully.
Dr. Scott Baker is here, the school superintendent in Spotsylvania. We're going to take a break and come back. We'll talk about the budget and how you prepare and think about a budget in these times. When we come back with Dr. Baker on News Talk 1230 WFVA, it is now 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Shoup.
Spotsylvania School Superintendent Dr. Scott Baker has taken time out this morning to join us, which we are very appreciative of. Dr. Baker, next on Tuesday, you'll present a budget to the school board. They'll work on it, then goes to the Board of Supervisors later this spring. I don't know how you put a budget together with looking at what you're doing. It's almost like you have to have a crystal ball there to try to guess what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's certainly every year is challenging. I think because post the last recession, not to mention that we're at least having the uncertainty of one right now. It used to be that you had some things that you could accurately predict. But right now, every budget year has some familiar tunes and then some new songs, you know, some new stories that come out of it. And for this one, the way that we've approached it is that last year we were maneuvering together with the county. The county administrator and I had had a really good planning process up to the point at which I recommended a division budget. And we were proceeding with a really good, a couple of key initiatives in salary increases and addressing additional resource needs. And between the additional state money and what we were already having projected at the county, we thought we were going to be able to do something substantial. When the pandemic hit, obviously we had to step back, and we've been really constantly assessing and reassessing what does that mean for us moving forward. And then the governor's most recent budget, I think, would still signal to us that it appears that the economic news for the future is not all dim, that there is some optimism, but there certainly isn't the confidence right now to provide those dollars to us that we need to support what we had recommended last year. But at the state level, there was some funding that was not removed, that we had to, we did not commit to expenditures fully this year because it was recurring dollars that we wanted to eventually be able to address salaries and positions with. So you combine that last year with this year, and we are trying to really focus head on addressing our needs for our people in terms of salaries. And last year they received no increase when we had originally proposed a minimum of 4% for all teachers and support staff and 2% for our administrators. As we come into this year, I believe that they are at minimum. We should be bringing that back to the table. But on top of that, the state has recommended, or they have put in the budget initially a 2% bonus that might eventually become a 2% increase recurring. But as you know from listening to us, when the state says that they are providing a 2%, that is a very small percentage or small amount of money that would really address a 2% pay increase for a school system as large as ours or for all of our staff. So they will provide a portion, but then the locality would have to provide, you know, the rest, or we would have to make significant reductions. So what I'm expecting and what we've been planning on is how do we maximize what we currently have. That's always a question. But also, how do we move forward in rewarding and affirming these incredible people that I have the honor to serve alongside each and every day? And when I talk with them, when I talk with parents, even my student group, I continue to hear that the vast majority of our folks have been heroic during this time, and they deserve to be compensated in such a way to reward them for their dedication and service during this remarkable time.
It is as amazing, and I see it in my own house with my wife being a Spotsylvania teacher, and to come home every day and you hear the teachers interacting, students and teachers interacting, from my basement, over the computer, and or teachers getting together off hours, strategizing. There just a lot goes on, or communicating with parents, trying to get get the technology to work, or just encouraging the parents of how to get their kids involved. It's been really an interesting year.
Well, and as you know, Ted, from being a spouse of a teacher. Teaching has been and always was very, very difficult anyway.
Yeah.
As was being a principal, as was being a support staff member, as was being a bus driver, a custodian. Every single one of those jobs has become significantly more challenging during this time. And yet, time and time again, our folks individually and collectively have stepped up and problem-solve, determine ways to be flexible and to kind of overcome those challenges in the moment. And they have constantly had to shift. They are engaging kids sometimes in dual instructional modalities at the same time. And I think that, I don't know if anyone knows how difficult that is unless they're doing it themselves or they can experience it. I think some of the folks that receive those services, students and parents in particular, and there's some upside to how we've been able to engage parents as partners through this. They have a much keener awareness of how we are trying to engage their children and how they can give us a lot of good feedback on what works with them and what could be done differently to help them. But the bottom line is they have stepped up to this extraordinary challenge, and I know we are planning to recommend a budget that would honor that.
How do you also plan? And do you have an idea of students that chose to either chose to be virtual all year or went elsewhere this year, of just how many, you know, people coming back. I guess you've got to try to figure out and make a good guess on what the student population will be when we get back.
Well, I think what we, from the feedback we received really at the outset, because a lot of those decisions were made at the beginning. Now, we have had some students who have transitioned back at the semester. We've also had some that have also transitioned for the remainder of the year out to a different program or a different service model. And we knew that that was going to be the situation throughout this year. But the indications that we have are that most folks that made that decision, once they believe that we are in a situation and a mode where we can have their kids in school every day, where there's more normalcy, and they believe it will be in the best interest of their kids again, I believe they will come back. And so what we're expecting and hoping is that at this time next year, the vast majority, if not all of those students in terms of the numbers, have returned, and we're actually wondering if we might have some increase in enrollment, over the next year.
But I can remember, I remember clearly the night a year ago when you presented the budget and like you described it, of working with the county administrator and really everybody's, every locality, whether it was city council, boards of supervisors, school boards, everything was lined up and everything just, it changed, you know, across the board in March.
It really did, and it was, in some ways, that was a bit semi-tragic. You know, obviously there are things that are a lot worse, so I don't want to say fully tragic, but we were, we had some really good planning momentum, and, you know, I think that we were positioned to be able to move forward, but you know, this wasn't just a Spotsylvania occurrence. It's happened everywhere. But I do think that moving forward, we need to continue to engage our folks, whether it's the Board of Supervisors, our county officials, state legislators. We have to engage them as partners, and we have to be professional, respectful, but also assertive that this is, you know, this is important right now, that we continue to receive at least the basic funding to enable us to do right by our students and our staff.
Well, and you hope, you mentioned, because I do think that parents now, I think we all realize some things about education that either we either took for granted or we actually learned, you know, how difficult it all is. And in going forward, you hope that you get more parents behind schools and become more vocal and understand the importance of what teachers and what goes on inside a school building every day.
Yeah, I do think we've realized some capabilities that, like I said before, we want to make a permanent fixture of what we provide in public education in Spotsylvania County. Parents have been, and I said this to a group last night, and it doesn't mean that everybody in the entire community is always providing warm and fuzzy feedback. I don't mean it to be naive or overly idealistic, but I do believe that we communicate every week with our community, with our staff, to try to keep, as our mission says, keep folks as much as possible together. And I think as we make that transition, I believe that we may be closer knit between our community and parents and our schools than we were prior to the pandemic. And so we want to continue to sustain that and to continue to keep folks as partners. And I also know that from the staff perspective, one of the positives is that there has been the need for people to collaborate and to rely on each other at a level that they probably didn't feel that they needed to before. We want to continue that, too, because we've always set out to be a highly collaborative organization, but we really want people to say, this is how we work now and forevermore. You know, we work together, and that we're going to better serve our students when we are constantly planning and engaging each other and what are the best ways to support our kids and our family.
Well, and you hope that some of the momentum with things, some of the things like Wi-Fi, it's much better than it was a year ago, but there still is a ways to go, and that momentum continues, and that a lot of gaps get filled in, and going forward with that, hopefully there is the day that everybody in all areas of Spotsylvania County have access to Wi-Fi.
I think you nailed it. I am really, as you know, we've provided 900 hotspots to support our students and families who do not have Wi-Fi connections out in their homes or in their communities. And we knew that was not a, it wasn't a long-term solution, but we wanted to do all that we could to try to close that gap in terms of equity. But we still have areas where hotspots won't work, where they're just not adequate. And we also, we have mobile hotspots to try to help in areas where it could be more of a means issue than actual Wi-Fi connection. But if there are some things that we as a school division cannot control, we can advocate for. But to close that digital divide, folks need to stay focused on that and not let it go in perhaps 6 months when it doesn't look like we have the same need potentially. And I am a little concerned about that. I'm concerned that there could be some selective amnesia when it comes to staying focused on closing that digital divide and making sure that we have that broadband and that high, that Wi-Fi connection for all of our students and families throughout our area and in the state.
Yeah. Dr. Scott Baker in this morning, the school superintendent in Spotsylvania. We'll take a quick break and we will wrap it up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Spotsylvania School Superintendent Dr. Scott Baker is here this morning, and just a few more minutes left. Dr. Baker, one of the people we have, and one the group that we a lot of heroes. There definitely are a lot of heroes on the school side of things. But boy, the people that at night and all times of the day are cleaning the schools, what a job that has been.
Oh, it has been unsung heroes even before this, but. You may remember that a few years ago we transitioned to having what was an outsourced custodial operation to bringing it back internal, which added some cost, but we were more concerned with efficiency and effectiveness, which we weren't sure that we were getting through the previous process. And when those folks, I see it every single day. They have had to learn to use new equipment. They have had to constantly and vigilantly address cleaning all throughout the day. And as you know, when I was talking about our capacity, sometimes there have been situations where folks were having to go and work at multiple schools because of shortages in staff, sometimes because folks were quarantined or folks had been impacted by the virus. So not only have they stepped up, sometimes they have had to work significantly more to make sure that we maintain the cleanliness levels so that it's a safe and healthy environment. And I appreciate, too, how our maintenance folks have continued to help coordinate that. But as you know, we continue to try to get more supplies to sustain that over time. But it really comes down to the people that do those jobs who have been extraordinarily supportive throughout this long period of time.
Boy, it has been a tough go, but they have consistently kept schools clean, and we've seen it just by the numbers and in the fact that there haven't been the widespread outbreaks, and that shows they're doing what they should do.
Yes, absolutely. I know that again. I credit them, and I credit our staff. You know, the other thing that our teachers and our folks have done really well is if there ever appears to be something that's not addressed, they're very quick to make sure that that's known so that it can be remedied. Hmm. And I do think that it's going to be something, too, that as we move forward, we hope that we have gained through this process, that we've gained more capacity, more understanding, more efficient teamwork, and that we will carry that over into whatever that new norm looks like.
Well, it looks like we could possibly, the early and middle part of next week, get a storm, and I was thinking you might not be as tense about that right now with the way the situation is.
Well, there were so many years there where it just seemed like we were constantly getting inclement weather. Yeah. And this is the second year in a row where we have not had the interruption. So sometimes I don't think it's a bad thing at all, especially with the stress that everyone's been under.
Yep.
To have nice, white, fluffy snow out there that people can enjoy. But we've been engaging our advisory groups, including our teacher advisory, on how we can best utilize our virtual capacity when we have inclement weather. Right now, it's very difficult to provide equity and have synchronous instruction. We also have to be able to consider feeding our students
yeah.
who are in need during that time. So we've been getting some recommendations as to how we can best do that. But I also, and you know this, there are many teachers, many students and families who are like, please don't take away snow days altogether.
Yep.
Because we sometimes just need a nice day where that we don't have to think about making up, that we can just enjoy it as part of, the traditions of being in education. And I think we're open to that. But once we get into an inclement weather situation where we're having to be out for multiple days, maybe
yeah.
even, we want to be able to capture the time in order to keep kids where they need to be in terms of learning.
Dr. Scott Baker, Spotsylvania School Superintendent. Dr. Baker, we'll talk again soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 30 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.